people tend not to do much in the way of reading these days. The box in the corner has taken over from the books on the shelf, or perhaps has caused the books to remain on the shelf. But even if you haven't read the book, I think most of you here have probably seen the BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. It was on when I first came here to New Zealand in 96, and it was being repeated just a few weeks ago, I think. Well, Jane Austen wrote more than one book, not just Pride and Prejudice, but a number of others, and one of those is called Mansfield Park. Now, it may well be that the Christians in Jane Austen's day wouldn't have touched her books with a barge pole. And yet, today, Christians will encourage each other to read them. I think that is probably more than anything else a very sad indictment on the way that society has developed over the last 100 years or so. But there are some very good things in Jane Austen's books, as well as a sad picture of the upper classes in her day and the frivolity of their lifestyles and their vanity. Well, Fanny Price, the heroine in Mansfield Park, was one of the stars of Austen's novels. She was a poor person who was taken in by a rich aunt and uncle, Sir Thomas and Lady Bertram. She was considered the poor niece, the poor cousin. She wasn't given the same standing in the household as their own two sons and two daughters. She was treated almost as a servant from the day that she arrived there as a young child, right the way through into adulthood. However, she was a submissive girl, an obedient girl. She grew up to be a model character, really, of what these other two girls ought to have been, but weren't at all. And during the course of the novel, as it unfolds, you see all the troubles and difficulties that these frivolous and vain daughters of Sir Thomas get into, and you see how Fanny Price, the niece, grows up to be a good, moral, righteous person. And you see as well how the father, Sir Thomas, begins to appreciate more and more the qualities in his niece. And instead of treating her like a stranger and a servant, begins to treat her more and more like a daughter. It was Fanny's quiet submission. It was her ready obedience. It was her caring attitude, always ready to put others first, to be their servant, to care for them. It was the way that she submitted to what those around her considered to be her proper status in the Bertram household that caused her to grow up to be a helpful and a loving person, and caused her to gain the admiration of her uncle. Eventually, she received a position in the family. Submission and obedience in the face of a difficult situation were what helped Fanny Price there. And it's what Peter talks about in this section that we're going to look at this morning in his first letter. In chapter 2 and verses 13 through 17, Peter talks about submission to governments or submission to authorities, because you can apply these verses not only to national governments or provincial governments, but you can apply it to almost any authority. You can apply it to the authority of parents over their children, of teachers over their students, of local councils over the community, of the governments of a nation, over its subjects. Peter is encouraging his readers to act in a similar way to Fanny Price, to be quietly submissive and obedient. He's explained to them that they are living as aliens in this world, that they are strangers, that they are temporary residents here. Now, someone reminded me last week of the hymn, "This is my Father's world." And that is quite true. And we do live in this world, and not everything in this world is evil. And there is much to give us pleasure, and much that we can take hold of and love. But Peter's emphasis here is that he wants his people to realize that this world will pass away, no matter how wonderful some of the things are, no matter how good they are, that it is temporary, it is passing, and that we mustn't think that we can somehow keep hold of this life. We mustn't become too comfortable here so that our hope for the life to come is somehow marred and tainted or not as strong as it should be. He wants them to know that they live as temporary residents here. They're aliens here in this world. But at the same time, even though they are temporary residents, they shouldn't live as though they have no responsibility in this world. They should live as though their eternal home is yet to come, but that nevertheless they have a home here. They have a place here, and they have responsibilities here. Though their citizenship is in another country, they have a responsibility to obey the laws of this world. Just as I, who am a citizen of the United Kingdom, have a responsibility while I live here in New Zealand to obey the laws of New Zealand. So here and in the following verses, Peter begins to apply the general teaching that he's just given, that while they are aliens and strangers in this world, they must nevertheless conduct themselves in a way that is honourable among the Gentiles, in a way that displays the goodness of God, and it will be glorifying to God. They must live, therefore, in a way that will not bring condemnation upon them justly. And Peter goes through a range of topics in which he specifically applies this general teaching. And the first of these sections then deals with the Christian's attitude and behavior towards governments. And I want to dwell just very briefly this morning on this theme. It's developed again in the next section on submission to masters. But because that brings in other issues, I want to deal with that separately, as Peter does himself in his letter. But what is it that Peter's asking his readers to do? He says there, "Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to the governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good." Submit to every ordinance of man, or as it might be better translated, every institution of man. Or to make it perhaps even more clear, every institution which has authority among mankind. In other words, places where there are rules to be followed. In a country where there are national laws. In a community where there may be laws peculiar to that particular location. In an institution like a school where there are rules to be followed. Even in the home, where there is an authority to be obeyed. In every institution, be submissive. And the word to submit here isn't a word of weakness. It simply means to obey, to acknowledge those laws and to obey them, to submit to them, to say, yes, I understand that law and I will live according to that law. So while here are people who are temporary residents, Peter says, nevertheless, submit to authority. Bow down to authority. Obey those who rule over you. You know, ambassadors go from one country to another and they represent that country in the new country that they live in for a time. You know, David Goldsmith, he lives in Wellington and he lives next door to the Russian ambassador. He's never been invited for dinner yet, but he's hoping. The ambassador from Russia to New Zealand. And you know these great men who represent their countries? They have what is called diplomatic immunity. It means that they can't be arrested. The most that can be done with them is that they can be expelled and sent home. They can't be arrested, they can't be imprisoned. If the Russian ambassador does something wrong, he might get sent home, but he won't be sent to a New Zealand prison. We are told by Paul that we are ambassadors for Christ in this world. But we don't have diplomatic immunity. We have to submit to the laws of this world. We are responsible to be obedient and submissive in this life, in this country, as well as in that country to which we hope eventually to go. And Peter says that we're to submit to every authority, whether to governments themselves, whether to Jenny Shipley and her cabinet, or whether to those who have been delegated by the government to do certain duties, like the police force, for example. Their role, we're told by Peter, is to punish wickedness and to encourage good behaviour. Now that, it is thought by some commentators, was actually the part of the instructions given to the governors of the Roman provinces, that as the emperor sent them out to govern certain smaller areas of his great empire, he would say, commission them to go and punish evildoers and praise those who do good. Discourage wrongdoing and encourage good behaviour. That is their role. But I'm sure it's already risen in your minds, this question. But what if governments are not fulfilling their responsibilities? What if governors are not punishing evildoers and praising those who do good? What then? Do we still take literally what Peter says here, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake? Do we still do that? Or can we qualify it? Or does their lack of responsibility mean that we can relinquish our responsibility to submit to them? Well, you know, Peter lived in an interesting time. He lived in the first century AD. He lived at the same time as Jesus Christ, as I'm sure you all remember. But that may have sort of not sunk in to you. Because remember what happened to Christ? Who was the governor in Judea when Jesus Christ lived? And certainly at the end of Christ's life, it's Pontius Pilate. What did Pontius Pilate do when he questioned Jesus? He said, I can find no fault with this man. And then what did Pontius Pilate do with Jesus? He took a bowl of water and he washed his hands. And he says, I will have nothing more to do with this man. And then what did he do? He handed him over to his soldiers on behalf of the Jews and had him crucified. There was a man who was not rewarding good behavior and punishing evildoers. He let Barabbas go free. And he crucified Jesus Christ, the Son of God, in whom he himself stated he could find no fault. And Peter says to us, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man, remembering all that had happened in those closing days of Jesus' life. Peter wrote this letter round about 60 AD. The Roman emperor of the time was Nero. Some of you will have read about Nero. One historian says that Nero was a monster of wickedness, one of the vilest men ever to occupy a throne. And when Peter here in 1 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 13 and in verse 17 uses the word king, he's using the same word that was used to refer to the emperor of Rome, to Caesar, to Nero. And Nero was on the throne in Rome at this time. And Peter says, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to Nero as supreme, or to his governors, whether they be Pontius Pilate or anyone else, submit to them, honour them. You know what Nero did? Nero, apparently, it hasn't been disproved, but neither has it been proved, somehow set fire to part of the city of Rome. And of course, the population were not too happy about that. And in order to shift the blame, he blamed the Christians in Rome. Everyone was suspicious of the Christians. Here were a group of people, unlike all the other peoples, never offered sacrifices to their God. They wouldn't acknowledge any other God, said that their God was the only God, and they worshipped this man, Jesus Christ, who had been crucified in Jerusalem. Strange people. Always under suspicion, and as soon as Nero suggested that they had done this thing, the population pounced on them, and Nero had every opportunity to do as much evil to them as he could. He would dress them up in animal skins and send them out to the lions and the wild dogs in the amphitheatres to be torn apart. He would crucify them, and indeed, according to tradition, that is how Peter himself died, crucified upside down by Nero's henchmen. But Nero also took some of those Christians and covered them with pitch while they were still alive and lit them and had them as lamps to light the way to his palace. And Peter says, submit. Submit to this man. No qualification. No excusing any kind of rebellion. Just the simple word, submit. Obey. Do what he says. Peter's letter has a theme running through it of holiness. His letter is about living godly lives in a godless world. It's a letter written to people whom Peter is very sure are on the verge of great persecution. And as it turned out, they were from 64 to 68 AD, Nero persecuted the Christians relentlessly until in 68 AD he took his own life. And Peter in this book is preparing his readers for this time of persecution. It's coming. He's been given some inkling of it. He's heard what Christ had to say would happen in the last days and the persecutions that would come and so on. He's seen all the signs around him and he knows that this is about to happen. And he tells his readers, even under persecution, when it comes in all its awfulness, submit to those who have the rule over you. Be submissive, be obedient, even then. So Peter isn't just calling Christians to submit to good governments. He's calling them to submit to all governments. Why? Why is he asking this? What is his reason for doing this? Well, in verse 13 he says, for the Lord's sake. And then in verse 15 he says, this is the will of God. We're to submit because God requires it. God requires us to behave in such a way that we will bear witness to our heavenly citizenship. And part of that is being obedient to those who are in authority. That's what verse 12 spoke about, wasn't it? He tells his people to have their conduct honourable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, when they slander you as those who do wicked things, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Remember, I said last week that Peter is saying by good behaviour you may have opportunity to give a witness to those who are against you, so that in God's mercy and grace they may come to be one with you, may come into this kingdom of God, may become fellow citizens with you of this heavenly nation. And so Peter's applying that here to submission to governments. Do this. Live in such a way by submission and obedience that you may bear witness to your heavenly citizenship. That you may display yourselves to be good people. Good citizens on earth as well as good citizens in heaven. And true Christians will bring good to any country. Their influence will be a good influence. It will be salt and life and light in society. It will be have a mellowing effect upon the culture and the society, so that wickedness doesn't expand as quickly or as far as it might otherwise do without the good influence of Christians. And there have been periods in the history of the church when this was far more evident than at others. The 18th and early 19th centuries was one such period where Christians seemed to be in every walk of life. They were at the forefront of raising up hospitals that took care of the poor who couldn't otherwise afford treatment. They were at the forefront of enterprise in almost every area of life. They had a good influence upon society. And this goodness, this upright lifestyle, Peter says, will perhaps silence ignorant and foolish men. People who are so prejudiced against Christians that they see all the good as being evil and all the evil as being good. Who thinks that the lifestyle of Christians is something to be worried about, that it will bring down society, that it will cause chaos, rather than seeing it as something that does good to society and binds it together and builds it up. They're ignorant of the truth of what obedience to God will bring, and they're foolish in their ignorance. But unfortunately, you see, there are many Christians throughout the history of the world who haven't been as submissive and obedient as they ought to have been and have brought dishonor upon the name Christian. We are to submit. We are to bow down to governors, to those in authority. We are to be obedient to them because God says we are. And we are to be obedient to God because we are his bondservants. We are his slaves. We have been made free, Peter says, as free from sin, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. We have been freed from the condemnation of the law, but we are not free to disregard the law. We are free from the punishment that sin entails. But we are not free to just go on in sin, as Paul says, that grace may more abound. We are to be obedient to God. And obedience to God means being obedient to the institutions on earth. We are also to reflect Jesus Christ. We saw that in chapter 1. Where we are to be obedient children. And we are to be as brothers to Christ. We're to reflect Christ's characteristics. We're to reflect God as our Father. Like Father, like Son. That's how we're to be. That's how we're to live. And you know that Jesus Christ was obedient supremely. Because Paul tells us that Jesus Christ was obedient to death, even the death on the cross. He submitted to his Father's will, this plan of salvation that had been worked out. And if Christ had not been submitted, we would not be here today. And if Christ had not been obedient to the authority of his Father, then we would have no hope today. If Christ had not gone to Calvary, if he had not been raised up on that cross, if he had not died there for us, then we would have no hope. It is because of Christ's submission that we have life. And our life is to be a life of submission to the same Father, to the same God. Philip Doddridge wrote in that hymn that we sang a moment ago, "How gentle God's commands, how kind his precepts are. Come, cast your burdens on the Lord and trust his constant care." Cast your burdens on the Lord, Peter says, because he cares for you. God's commands aren't onerous. They're not painful. They are good and they are just. And he supports us in them while providence supports. Let saints securely dwell. That hand which bears all nature up shall guide his children well. Why should this anxious load press down your weary mind? Haste to your heavenly Father's throne and sweet refreshment find. We can be obedient to God with full confidence that obedience to him means good for us. His ways are perfect. His ways are good. And as bondservants of his, as slaves of Jesus Christ, we have nothing to fear. We serve a good master. We have one who is looking out for our best interest. And he asks us to submit to those in authority. And he puts it like this in verse 17. He says, "Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king." Peter says to his people, well, you're Christians. You know our Lord's command that you are to love your neighbor as yourself. You're to honor all people, give due respect to all people. You know that. That's been a part of your Christian heritage. You've understood that. And you also know that you are to love the brotherhood in particular. You love all people in general. You honour them. But you love the brethren in particular. When there are needs, our attention goes first to those who are in the faith. Our priority is there because we love our brothers as being part of this same kingdom that we are in. And you know as well, Peter says, that you are to fear God. You're to respect God. You're to honour God. You're to bow down to God. You're to recognise that God has power over you to convict you and to punish you, far beyond all the power that man has. Well, you know these things to be true, Peter says. Well, here's another thing that you must learn to be true, that you are to honour the king. Honour all men. Well, that means you must honour the king. If you're to fear God and walk in obedience to him, then that means you must honour the king. You must obey him. You must submit to his laws. Obeying earthly authorities is not an option for Christians, no matter how evil they may be. Except, and there is a but in all of this, except when the authority of a king, of a prime minister, of a president, whoever else, when that authority conflicts with God's authority. We read in Acts, didn't we, about Peter and John and what they said after they were imprisoned and brought before the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council, and were told, do not any more go healing and preaching this name, Jesus. We forbid you. And Peter, who here says, submit to every instituted authority, there said, you judge who we should obey, you or God. So there's a but. Peter says, submit to all authority, except when that authority requires you to sin against God. You may not like what they're asking you to do. Pay more taxes. Ooh, don't like that. Do it. Taxes to whom taxes are due. Custom to whom custom is due. Honour to whom honour is due. That's what Paul says in Romans chapter 13 in a section that is almost identical to this of Peter's. We may not like the things we're asked to do, but we must submit unless they are causing us to sin. Now, we live in a liberated world, and that liberation brings us a certain amount of freedom, and it's good. Occasionally, we have the freedom to choose what authority we come under. In fact, we have that freedom every few years in countries like this, where we have the opportunity to vote for those who will have authority over us. Now, I realise that we don't have unlimited freedom in that. We don't get the chance to put just whoever we want there in the Prime Minister's seat. But we have that opportunity to influence, and we should take that opportunity. And there are other institutions that we have where we can make a choice. We can choose which school we'll send our children to or not, as the case may be. So we can choose and we can see what their requirements are, and we can say, well, no, I'm not happy with the way they do things there. And I don't want my children to have to submit to that kind of authority. So, well, I'll choose this school because they don't require that. You see, there are certain choices that we can make to avoid the dilemma, the conflict of having to submit to something that we're not entirely happy with or even worse, having to rebel, to turn against something that is against God's laws. The pilgrims on the Mayflower made that decision, having spent years in a Europe that was being torn apart and with very little freedom to serve and worship God as they believed was right. Those men and women set sail on the Mayflower and crossed the Atlantic Ocean to set up a new way, a new authority under which they could submit. And so the United States was born. And we still see in the laws of the United States much that reflects the laws of New England and of the Puritans that crossed on the Mayflower. They had the choice, they had the opportunity to escape from Britain and Europe and make a new life for themselves without all the turmoil that they had been experiencing before. We must use the freedom that we have and use it wisely and well. The privileges that God has given us, we have them now. Perhaps in years to come, we will lose them. We must do all that we can to maintain them. But even if we do lose them, we must still submit. We must still be obedient. We must still reflect Jesus Christ and his own obedience, which enabled us to become members of this new nation, this heavenly kingdom. We're temporary residents in the world. We're here for a time. But while we're here, we must submit. We must obey. And in doing so, we must pray that God will honor this and use it in our witness, that others may be drawn to Christ and to this way of life that he has opened up for us. May God help us and strengthen us for this great task. Amen.